is the UR Business Network.
Good morning and welcome to the Medical Travel Show. This is Irving Stackpole, and my guest today is Chris Robertson, who is Professor of International Business and Strategy at the DeMore McKim School of Business at Northeastern University in Boston. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Irving. It's great to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and I wanted to ask, as you are the chair of International Business and Strategy there, I know your interest is in the cultural dimensions of international business. Can you elaborate on what those cultural dimensions are? What does that mean?
Well, there have been a few different academic people who have created these cultural dimensions. The most famous is a guy named Professor Gert Hofstede from Holland. And what he did basically is he came up with four initial dimensions. I won't go into all of them, but for example, one is individualism versus collectivism. And what Professor Hofstede asserts is that in every culture around the world, people tend to either lean toward individualism, which means their primary goals are to benefit themselves and then their immediate families, or they lean toward collectivism, which means that people tend to put group and societal goals over individual goals. So what we try to do when looking at countries from a business perspective is try to take a look at what are some of the cultural dimensions, how do they vary across borders, how do they vary within countries if a country has multiple subcultures. So that's essentially what we tend to talk about with cultural dimensions.
Can you give us an example? Can you give our audience an example of a culture that's predominantly individualistic versus one that's predominantly collectivistic?
Sure. The United States of America. Mm-hmm. We actually scored very high on individualism. Actually, most of the Anglo-Saxon leaning countries, mm-hmm. UK, Australia, the former British colonies tended to score high on individualism. Mm-hmm. Collectivism tends to be more prominent in Asia and parts of Latin America, not all of Latin America.
Interesting.
We do have some differences within the region. So China, for example, very collectivistic.
Mm. How does this play out in the type of international business, which is international medical and health travel? If a person from China who's fundamentally collectivistic wants to come to the United States, which is fundamentally individualistic, what is that experience like? Where does the rubber meet the road, so to speak?
Well, it's a good question, Irving. I think it's not just individualism. When people look to travel for tourism, for business, for medical reasons, I think the cultural difference between their home culture and the target foreign culture where they may want to go, I think that difference is something they ponder. But that's one piece of a very large puzzle. Mm-hmm. And of course, individualism would be one piece of that piece. So I think someone from China would think about not just how do Americans operate? Is there any sort of group insurance or group mentality about medical procedures? But and other things, cultural issues such as language, other mannerisms, and how comfortable people feel in certain foreign cultures.
Interesting. So the Professor Hofstede's four dimensions of culture has a direct bearing on not just medical or health or wellness travel, but on many, many dimensions of international exchange, yes?
I would say so, sure, yeah.
Now, the destinations themselves, how do these destinations rate or rank in consumers, in the point of view of consumers? I've read, for example, that the Swiss are seen around the world as very precise and time-oriented. What role does the brand of a destination have in international travel and international medical travel?
Okay, so we're talking about country brands. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking about this topic in my class later today. Consumers, tourists, managers who are considering foreign direct investment, government officials, and medical travelers, they tend to have perceptions of countries based on many factors, based on perhaps a Hollywood film they have seen, or a book they read, or someone they know from a country, or perhaps prior travel experiences. And what happens is that people develop these perceptions or preconceived notions about countries, and it's fairly difficult to change a perception over time, at least dramatically change it. But countries lately have been trying to create stronger, more positive images of their countries as business and tourism destinations, including medical travel. So, to your question, I think it certainly is a factor when people weigh different options. They have perceptions of different countries, and part of that is risks involved, the people they're going to deal with, the standard of living, and of course there are some perceptions that perhaps are 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Colombia is a classic example, where Colombia has had decades of turmoil, but that's really started to turn around. As a matter of fact, about 10 years ago, it started turning around, and their economy has been cooking lately.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems related to terrorism and drugs have really gotten incredibly under control relative to the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, nevertheless, the perception of Colombia hasn't changed too much. So people are a bit tentative when they think about going to Colombia for travel or any kind of tourism. But as a result, Colombia has a fairly prominent country brand office where they're trying to market and promote the new Colombia, the new safer, risk-free Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with this because, of course, the work that we've done in Colombia. I wanted to ask if you can give our audience examples of countries or destinations or regions or cities that have done, in your opinion, have done a good job in shifting the perception, what had been a negative perception, to a more positive perception. Can you give us some of those examples?
Yeah, I can. My research and professional interests tend to gravitate to Latin America, so my examples will probably be from there. But Peru is a fantastic example. The Peruvian turnaround story is one that government officials from around the world are looking to for as an example. And part of the success of Peru has been the economic turnaround and the, the calming of internal strife, but also the marketing and the branding of the country has been incredible. So Peru came up with a new logo. Have you seen this? It's about 2 years old now. It's kind of a swirly little P, and it's Peru spelled out in red. When they launched the new logo, which is the logo for the Peru country brand, they did it at the New York Stock Exchange about 2 years ago with a massive banner, and they promoted it globally on the world stage. And that logo has found its way to everything. I was just in Peru a couple of weeks ago. It's on the collars of chefs and restaurants. It's on, and if you go to a supermarket, it's stamped onto 80% of the products, it seems. So there's not only a sense of national pride, but there's this image that they've promoted and put out there. Now, Peru has benefited. Tourism and trade tend to be fairly linked when it comes to country brand. Mm-hmm. Machu Picchu has the number of travelers to Machu Picchu has climbed for two decades, and it's and they're pretty much hovering at an all-time high, and that has led to a real positive image for Peru and the mystique of the Incas and Machu Picchu, and which has spilled over into the trade side. Mm-hmm. So managers and executives are curious about Peru, and of course they want to go there and explore, but they've been quite pleased. I'm actually looking at, there's a group from Madrid called Bloom Consulting, and they do a ranking of country brands each year. And so I'm actually just looking at 2012. They split it up between trade and tourism. And interestingly, for trade, Colombia came out number 35 in the world, and Peru number 46. Mm-hmm. So Colombia has a fairly strong trade perception. But when it comes to tourism, Peru number 52 and Colombia drops to number 69. Mm. So there definitely are some correlations, but not super strong, between those two concepts.
One of the things that we've found in our research is that if an individual has been to a destination, they are far more likely to have a positive perception of that destination than if they haven't. And this seems almost regardless of what the current popular press is saying about that destination. Does your research corroborate or contradict that?
You know, I haven't done research on that topic, but it sure makes sense to me, Irving. Unless someone had a really bad experience.
Right.
But that tends to be less common, I think.
Right.
Even when people travel to places that are in the developing world, that are, you know, have a lot more poverty, perhaps a lot more crime and problems, infrastructure problems, et cetera, I think people from the more developed countries tend to wear it as a bit of a badge of honor. I've been to Bolivia or you know, wherever, and they like to tell their story and look at the positive. But I think your theory makes sense.
What we found was that individuals who had been to Mexico for either business or leisure and family were far less impacted by the popular press's coverage of the narcotics traffic-related violence than others. So it seems like if you've been to a place, you understand that there may be rough spots. It shouldn't deter you from considering travel to the entire place.
Absolutely. And I think the popular press, even the internet news sites, they tend to gravitate toward negative stories. Mm-hmm. And some of those may be geographically very far away from where the tourists go or where the medical travelers go.
Right.
Many developing countries have pockets of problems, but also pockets of very safe places that are very developed. And I find that's a pretty common phenomenon. Yeah, with Mexico, I think you're spot on. People, if you read the news, you don't see too many positive stories coming
right
out of Mexico.
Right.
And you see quite a few negative stories, and they look pretty scary. So why in the world would you go? But then you talk to people who just went to Mexico, and it doesn't seem so bad.
Right, right. So where do you see in Latin America, where do you see these pockets of opportunity?
Well, I see them first off in the major capital cities. I think it's hard to generalize about a countries when we talk about opportunities and development, because most of the countries in Latin America have major cities, one or two, maybe three if you're talking about Brazil. And in those major cities, you see quite a bit of development, quite a bit of foreign direct investment. The big problems tend to be more under control from the perspective of infrastructure and crime and so on. So places like Bogota, Mexico City, Buenos Aires, Sao Paulo, Santiago, and Lima come to mind as you know, major cities that have been making pretty significant strides in recent years.
Has the recent initiatives, well, it's not so recent any longer, but the president in Mexico, Nieto, have his initiatives, are they laying the groundwork for a real sea change in how the world looks at Mexico?
Explain a little more, which initiatives are you talking about?
Well, he has challenged the previously unassailable oil, the nationalized oil company, and has won to some degree privatizing or offering the opportunity for private investment. He's challenged the teachers' unions. He just had a recently State of the Union address where he announced an enormous new airport for Mexico City, which heaven knows it needs. So some of these initiatives, I think, seem to be flying under the radar here in the United States, and it has been easy to overlook the size of the economic engine that is Mexico here in the United States because the news has been fundamentally negative.
Right. I think the efforts to create some new opportunities for foreign investors and to develop the air and land infrastructure, I think that will be really well received around the world. Of course, Mexico has, for the last 5 to 10 years, has struggled with its image, its brand, and partly due to some of the problems along the border and some of the gang issues. But I think these initiatives will pull some of the eyes away from the negatives, assuming it gets out there more in the media. But nevertheless, investors are going to be happy.
Right.
It sure sounds like it. And, you know, the bottom line oftentimes is the bottom line. So if it's more efficient, less expensive, better opportunity to go to Mexico compared to Bogota, then a company will probably do it. They certainly will weigh the risks, but if the financial benefits are head and shoulders above another opportunity, risk is worth assuming most of the time.
If you had the president of Mexico's ear, what kind of coaching would you give him regarding how to transform or shift the image, the perception of Mexico to the audiences, the general consumer audiences in the United States?
Excellent question. If I had his ear, I would say emphasize a few things. Number one, the tourism opportunities that are still alive and well in Mexico, and underline that they're alive and well. So I think that's important. People have, for many, many decades, Americans have gone down to Mexico for tourist reasons. Number two, of course, I would encourage him to, in a very optimistic way, emphasize that the crime issues are getting under control, or at least that there is a very clear and firm strategy that is being implemented that would put people more at ease. And third, I would emphasize the business opportunities that are because of new policies that are going to be forthcoming. It's hard to, the challenge, Irving, is to try to get that all into a cogent message without being too wordy like a professor from Boston. So I would, that's why you have marketing people.
Right.
So I think you can do it. And sometimes you don't have to say too much. If you go on the internet and watch if you Google country brand videos, you see a few that are excellent, and they really don't. There's not a lot of words. It's really just images, and a few descriptions.
Well, I'm reminded of the "I Love New York" campaign, which came out at a time when the murder rate in New York had reached the global communications platform and was being portrayed as Murder City in the United States. And of course, the murder rates in New York have never approached the murder rates that exist in some other cities, but we shall leave that off the air at the moment. But I Love New York was a terrific example of a campaign which wasn't initially dramatically expensive, but indeed has reached the point now where it's iconic. And one sees these I with the heart, the symbol of the heart, and then any number of things afterwards. I heart logo, I heart hot dogs. There's all kinds of things out there that are carrying that message, which all, of course, helps to reinforce the I Love New York campaign. And no, Chris, I don't think that the answers, intelligent and thoughtful answers from professors in Boston are too lengthy at all. I think we need some more of those. And this has been extraordinarily constructive, and there's so many issues that you raised. I would welcome the opportunity to have you back on the show to explore these in greater detail.
I would love to return.
Excellent. And so how can members of the audience who want to get in touch with you and ask you further questions or to request further information, how can they reach you, Chris?
The best way to catch me is by email. So I'm c.robertson@neu.edu. And I tend to be in Boston in and out most of the year, but I do spend time in Latin America, primarily the west coast of South America. So it's common to find me in Colombia, Peru, Chile at different times in the year. So if you email me from Chile, I might be there.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you, Chris. Our guest has been Professor Christopher Robertson of the International Business and Strategy Department at DeMoore McKim School of Business, Northeastern University. This is Irving Stackpole, and you have been listening to the Medical Travel Show.
You're listening to the UR Business Network. Broadcasting from Woburn, Mass.